the line here by author and publisher and social activist Stephen Manning. I think you're there, Stephen, are you?
I'm here, Eileen. Nice to speak to you.
I was going to say, author, publisher and social activist Stephen Manning of Integrity Ireland and Checkpoint Press. Now, I know you're down in Mayo, but this, first of all, I mean, you're quite a prolific author and publisher, but I came across an article about you very recently in the Irish Times, a very, very interesting article about some of the work that you're doing at the moment and basically some awful things that have been happening to you. And it kind of rang a bell for many reasons, but there seems to be kind of chaos going on in, well, both north and south here. We've got all the messing around that has caused us to have general elections coming up now.
Mm-hmm.
But down south, it's everything's gone crazy, of course, with this. The whole shenanigans to do with the whistleblower, the Garda whistleblower, Sergeant Maurice McCabe.
Yes, well, it's very timely in a way, Eileen, that this scandal, this Maurice McCabe scandal, has suddenly broken through. And I think what we all have to remember is that this scandal has been ongoing in the background. For several years. As a matter of fact, it goes back a number of years, I think 10, 12 years or something, since certain agencies and agents of the state decided to target a decent man who simply decided to point out some inadequacies and failings in the policing system we had down here. And if you think about it, in context of all of the serious woes and problems we do see sometimes in our various police forces, you know, to just point out that the penalty points were being wiped for connected persons and celebrities and judges and the like, and these penalty points were being wiped just as a favour to them. You know, there was no lawful reason that this should be done other than people were connected, and he pointed this out because he thought this was wrong. And we now know that there was an orchestrated, malicious and very devious and sinister smear campaign, which basically started off by fabricating interviews with a young woman who was allegedly raped and, interfered with when she was only 6 years old. And the whole thing is a fabrication. But it makes you realise, it makes you realise that there are some people working for agencies of the state here in Ireland who are not only capable of this sort of underhandedness, but they'll do it with a sort of a casual hubris and contempt for the people whose lives they're absolutely destroying. And it's all done just to protect the status quo. But like I say, it's very timely that this has broken just recently, because myself and my colleagues at Integrity Ireland and in other groups around Ireland, we've all been suffering similar campaigns by agents and agencies of the state, and it's been extremely difficult to get anybody in the mainstream media to pick up and talk about our stories, or indeed any of the statutory oversight bodies. And this, you know, it comes back to the original question that we were talking about, the setting up of the Integrity Ireland project.
Okay, can you maybe explain a little bit to our listeners here, what actually is Integrity Ireland?
Well, the Integrity Ireland is technically it's known as an association, in as much as I registered it so as to have some formal standing, and it's an association of members of the public. This is putting it very loosely, who believe that they have been wronged by agents or agencies of the state. And not only have they been wronged by these agencies of the state, but they cannot get any solution or any recourse by going back to the very same agencies or their so-called statutory oversight bodies. And in particular, we're looking at three main institutions: an Garda Síochána, the legal profession and the courts. And the simple reason for this, Eileen, is because logically speaking, anybody who has any particular problem with their neighbour, or if they're the victim of a crime, or they have some dispute, you will always end up dealing either with an Garda Síochána, the legal profession, and or the courts. And if we can't rely on those three institutions to do the right thing, then we're in a bad state. So that's how we set up. We set up Integrity Ireland. A small group of us got together back in 2012. We shared our stories over a cup of tea in a Dublin hotel, and the germ of an idea to sort of create some sort of a citizens-driven initiative that would do what the statutory oversight bodies are being paid to do, but they are not doing, which is to protect the lawful interests of members of the public who have nowhere else to go.
Right. We're in very, very frightening times. I think a lot of people have been, you know, there have been rumblings of discontent over the last maybe 5-6 years, I suppose, since the tiger died.
Yes.
You know, but actually I think people are really horrified by, especially with the events that have been shown to have been taking place over the last few years. I mean, last week was just wall-to-wall, you know, news, debate. This is, I'm talking about the television in the South, you know, all the channels that were just non-stop, all the papers were non-stop. But actually there are supposed to be talks this evening within the Fine Gael party, because it looks like Enda Kenny, who is the Taoiseach, looks like he is going to have to go, you know, because of the fallout from this, not just because of that, but I think this is kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Well,
you know, so there's going to be a big battle for the leadership. But funnily enough, when you mentioned earlier, Stephen, about how casually these lives were destroyed, I actually found myself reading something the other day, blinking in disbelief, because the Justice Minister, who's another person who was kind of seems to be in some way implicated with all this.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, and she's actually almost suggesting she might be a contender for the leadership. And I've read that so many times, I'm thinking,
well, in my opinion, we've got to hope and pray that that is not any longer a possibility. Now, and the reason I say this, and again, I'm very aware that it's difficult not to get personal about some of this when we've written literally dozens or scores of letters to the very same authority figures, telling them about some of the traumas and the shocking injustices that are being visited on individual families and people. And, you know, some people are taking their lives in despair over what's going on. You know, if I had a dollar for every phone call I've had from somebody who literally just wants someone to listen to them, because for years and years they've been complaining about some serious wrong done to them. And it ranges usually from, physical assaults or wrongful imprisonment and the like, or people being targeted just because they've had a falling out with somebody who's connected. And the next thing they know, that they're being stopped every day for some minor traffic offence and the like, or solicitors who have ripped somebody off and done so blatantly and obviously that it is astounding that once you bring the complaints into the Law Society or you try and take the matter back into court, that the judges don't act on it, or the Law Society says there's nothing to see here, or the Garda Ombudsman, etc., etc. And it's because people have to have a certain amount of trust in the system. But as we've seen this past couple of weeks, when we have the highest placed figures in the institutions of the state just looking bald-faced into a camera on an issue this serious, and I mean, it really doesn't get much more sinister than plotting behind the scenes. And we've got to remember again, these are some of the highest ranking people in Garda Síochána, in the Ministry for Justice, in our political forum, behind the scenes plotting to destroy the life of a totally innocent man. His only crime, if you like, was to point a finger at a corrupt establishment, and not even a very big finger either. But for that, they were willing to go out and spread rumours and leak them to connected reporters, who in turn leaked them back to their friends. And everybody and their uncles knew who the person at the centre of this sex abuse scandal was. Therefore, when any tribunals or any investigations came up about the conduct of his superiors, the finger would be pointed right back at him and say, this man is a sex abuser, we all know it, he can't be taken seriously. And of course, it destroys a person's life. But when we have people like this in such high positions of authority and power, just looking into the camera and lying through their teeth. You know, now, I've always been astonished that we continue to come back to the polls when there's an election. And in the knowledge that many of the people putting themselves forwards to be elected are sociopathic, pathological liars. We still see them re-elected, and you've got to ask yourself, what on earth is going on? And it's almost as if people sort of take it for granted. Ah, sure, you know, you're in politics, you are a liar. I even remember, actually, I think the last election, one of the more senior politicians, I won't name him now because, first of all, I'm not sure which one it was now, and I don't want to get him wrong, but he said after the election, when he was challenged, but you promised this, you promised that, you promised the other, and he says, ah, sure, that's what you do, isn't it, in order to get elected. In other words, we all understand that we lie through our teeth in order to get elected, and once we're elected, democracy is gone again for the next few years. And you have one party or the other dividing up the spoils of the country, basically, between themselves and their cronies at the expense of the general public and of the country of Ireland and of future generations. And it seems that's the way it's been going for, you know, ever since separation from the British state. You know, we've had basically Fine Gael or Fine Fáil in general just taking turns appointing all their own cronies to all the top positions of power and authority in agencies of the state, most especially in the courts, I might add, where all of the judges, when they are appointed because of their political connections and not necessarily on their merits or their qualities as a moral individual.
So it's funny because I remember actually even when Trump got in, you know, one of the big, or one just before, it was kind of around about the time, I think was it just before or just after, one of the big things that he was interested in was the appointment of the Supreme Court judge.
Yes.
And I kind of thought, you know, for a man who's always coming out with these big mad headlines and mad statements, I thought, I wonder why he's so interested in the whole thing about judicial appointments. And funnily enough, there's a politician in the South, the Minister for Transport, Shane Ross.
Yes.
Another one. And he would have always been outspoken about so many different issues. And he's a politician I would follow quite a lot. And I remember his one big thing for agreeing to go into government, I suppose, as part of the Independent Alliance, was that he wanted to have... the only thing really on his wish list was that he wanted to have a kind of an independent way of electing the judges, you know, and it was like, whatever way it was done before, they were appointed, you know, through the...
Well, I can explain this to you very briefly, if you like, Eileen. What they did, look, there was public disquiet. And I think we're going back now, and again, about 12 years ago, because of public disquiet about the overtly political way that judges were being selected and appointed. And I mean, I could give you numerous examples of this, but basically they would be local solicitors who were embedded with either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, or in some cases with Labour. And when those particular parties got a slice of the cake, got into power, and usually and often in the last few days of them holding office, a whole slew of appointments would be made to positions in the judiciary and, you know, civil service and so on, and all their people would be lined into these positions. But what a lot of people don't realise is that about 12 years ago, the Judicial Advisory Appointments Board was set up in order to soothe the public disquiet about this overt political appointment system. Now, the Judicial Advisory Appointments Board is comprised of all of the presidents of the various courts in Ireland and a few other selected individuals and members of the Law Society, the Attorney General, and so on and so forth. So it's very top heavy with people who are already embedded in the system. Now, I couldn't give you an exact number, but certainly scores of judges have been appointed in that over that period. And we were led to believe that the Judicial Advisory Appointments Board was there to ensure that there was some sort of filtering process and that they would then send a list up to the government of appointees to be chosen. Now, the first thing I need to tell you is this, is that the government has the automatic right to override any choices that are sent up to them. So, first of all, there's no obligation on the government to actually listen to what the Judicial Advisory Appointments Board is saying. That's point number one. And point number two, I'll ask you a question, Eileen. Have a guess how many interviews have been done in that period. And I think it's 12 years, it could be 10. But in a 10 or 12 year period, how many interviews have been done by the Judicial Advisory Appointments Board before they nominated judges up to the government?
Well, maybe none.
Exactly none. Not a single interview. It's another very typical example of the way that Ireland basically does business down here. It's all about the image. It's all about the front. It's all about giving the public the impression. And then it's publicised, you know, in RT and the mainstream media we have this system now that supposedly guarantees that we're going to get the right type of people selected as judges. But it's not. It's nothing of the sort. It's another fig leaf. It's another smoke and mirrors institution designed to mislead us into thinking that there is some probity in the choice of judges. But it's in fact the same business as usual, and still it's all done exactly the same way as before. You have local solicitors getting a TD or whatever to send in a letter of recommendation for themselves, and the government decides. As again, it's and a similar thing with the Garda Ombudsman. Hardly anybody knows this, but when a complaint is made about a guard to the Garda Ombudsman, the first thing they do is they notify the guard who's been complained about, which is understandable, and they notify the Garda Commissioner. And it is, in fact, the Garda Commissioner who assigns the investigating officers. All they do is they say that they are working for the Garda Ombudsman while they're doing it. You know, in other words, you get letters from the Garda Ombudsman, but it's still a member of an Garda Síochána doing the investigation. And at the end of it all, the paltry penalties that are meted out to people who are found guilty of some serious crimes in some cases whilst working for the state, for the Garda Síochána. It is the Garda Commissioner who has the unilateral decision to make whether or not that guard gets sanctioned, and it cannot be challenged. Now, isn't that astounding? And we're spending millions upon millions. There's some 90 staff working at the Garda Ombudsman. It costs, I think, in the region of 13 million a year just to run. And again, in general, even though there are one or two rare exceptions where you hear about a guard being sanctioned or investigated, the whole process is to deceive the public into thinking that there's genuine oversight of a state agency when in fact there isn't.
Like, it's very, very, very frightening.
And disturbing, yeah.
You know, and I mean, anyone who has been watching, I say it was like all last week, it was on all the channels, you know, RT in particular, they did a great show, I think it was Prime Time they had on, but also Vincent Brown, he generally... But actually, this week now it's a lot quieter, and Sergeant McCabe's name hasn't been heard as much. You know, it's almost like sometimes with news and politics, you know, a week. Don't they say that a week is a long time?
Well, you'd be aware, Eileen, of a thing called the fade factor. Well, the fade factor is another of the tactics, and this is the sort of stuff that I write about in the couple of books we've produced regarding this particular subject. But the fade factor is it's a phenomenon whereby if we all just shut up and say nothing and pretend it's not there, the public will lose interest and the matter will be dropped. So we're very, very heavily reliant on the mainstream media to keep stories running and keep them in the public eye. Otherwise, this fade factor thing kicks in. And it's actually it's a phenomenon which the establishment rely upon, and which they do play out down here, because we heard recently, I think it was Ruth Coppinger at TD, made a statement in the Dáil the other day, and she named two particular journalists who are very, very prominent down here, crime correspondents. But the way the system works here is that if you or I were to call Garda headquarters and ask for information about any particular case, you're just not going to get any information. You're going to be shut down, denied, ignored, whatever. What they do is they have a couple of reporters who are, you might say, embedded with an Garda Síochána. There's a very cosy and arguably unhealthy relationship there. But those chosen journalists then, they receive information from Garda Síochána, and that information is then disseminated out to sort of the lesser mortals, you know, the other reporters in the various mainstream outlets. And this is how the Garda Síochána controls the information that comes out about people like Maurice McCabe, or about penalty point scandals, or about so-called investigations ongoing. And it literally, unfortunately, it cannot be trusted. And I remember that, I think it was Justine McCarthy, a noted correspondent with the Sunday Times, and one of the, in my opinion, one of the braver journalists down here, who does take on the establishment from time to time. She made mention of the fact that a lot of these journalists know which reporters were involved in this smear campaign against Maurice McCabe, which senior members of Garda management were involved in it. And she was arguing at the end of her piece that it is their duty now, their moral duty, to go to whatever tribunal or commission has been set up to deal with this and give the names of those people.
Yeah. We're going to get cut off now here. Time is but
all right, Eileen.
I did read that article, and she was just saying normally journalists protect their sources.
Yes.
In this case, the source was toxic.
That's right, exactly.
They were actually at it and not telling the truth.
Yes.
We're going to actually have to go, but definitely looking forward to chatting to you again. I know you're going to be up in the city signing copies of your books, your various books, DIY Justice in Ireland,
yes.
Prosecuting by Common Informer,
yes.
As well as the Integrity Ireland SOS Guide. So I very much look forward to chatting to you again. Okay.
Lovely talking to you, Eileen, and keep up the good work.
All right, I'll see you now.
All the best, Eileen. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
All right, I'll see you now. All the best.
All the best, Eileen. Thank you. Bye-bye. Live from Sky, this is Drive 105's News on the Hour.